Welcome to Peak Tales, a conversation about chromatography. Now here's your host, John.
Hey, Peak Tales listeners, welcome back. This is season 3 of the Peak Tales podcast. Yeah, I can't believe that we've already seen 2 seasons behind us, but we are certainly going to continue to provide you great content. And take a listen to today's episode. Listen on through the end. We will have a special promotion code for you, the loyal listeners. So get set and get ready, because here we go.
Welcome back to the Peak Tales podcast. This is sort of a part 2. We're talking again about updating your HPLC method. And I'm joined once again by Rita. And we're going to be talking today about updating gradient methods. So in an earlier podcast, you might want to go back and listen to that one first if you haven't. We talk about isocratic methods. Today we'll be talking about gradient methods. Hi, Rita. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you for joining us once again. Now, are there differences between updating an isocratic method versus a gradient method?
Yes, there certainly are, and we'll talk more about that as we go through our podcast. But first, we'll start with talking about deciding whether we should update a method or not. When you're thinking about that, you need to consider a number of things. First, what's your goal? Are you analyzing a lot more samples than you did when your method was originally developed? If so, your goal may end up being to save time. Solvent costs contribute a lot to the cost per sample, so you may want to look at ways to reduce solvent usage as another reason. Maybe your results are not as good as you want them to be. Your peak shape could be improved, or your resolution. That's another good reason to consider updating. Some methods are not as reproducible as we would like them to be, and at some point you may decide you want to do something about that. You also may need to accommodate new applications or formulations and update an existing method to do that. There are a lot of reasons we may decide to update a method, but choosing the right column for that updated method will be a critical part of being successful.
So Rita, where is a good place to start when you want to update a method?
So just like with isocratic methods, if you want to save solvent, we can go to a smaller ID column. For instance, we may decide to go from a 4.6 millimeter ID column at 1 mil per minute to a 2.1 millimeter ID column. If we want to keep our gradient elution pattern the same, though, we need to reduce our flow rate proportionally to the decrease in our column ID. To do that, we square the ratio of the diameter of our new column divided by the diameter of the old column and multiply it by the original flow rate. As an example, the square of 2.1 divided by 4.6 is 0.208. So that's the two columns we just talked about, going from a 4.6 to a 2.1. We round that to 0.21, and then we take it times 1 mil per minute, which is the flow rate on our original 4.6 millimeter ID column, and we arrive at our new flow rate of 0.21 mils per minute for our new column. This gives us the same linear velocity as we had on our original column and will give us the same elution profile, and that's a critical thing to think about. We want to make sure we maintain that the same chromatography when we make any changes to our column. When we change our column dimensions, we can choose to reduce the length to reduce our analysis time instead of the ID. If we change the length, we can get a proportional change in the analysis time. For example, going from a 100 millimeter column to a 50 millimeter column will reduce our gradient time by 50%. Typically, we don't want to lose efficiency, so we are going to look at going to a smaller particle size to offset the difference in length. if we compare efficiencies on a 100 millimeter, 3.5 micron, totally porous particle to a 1.8 micron column, 3.5 micron column is going to have an efficiency of around 15,000, and the 1.8 is going to be around 12,000. We can go to a shorter column then with the smaller particle size and still have a very efficient column, which will likely give us the separation we need, but reduce our analysis time by roughly half. Now, some things to keep in mind to keep the relative peak position in the chromatogram the same as in the original method, we need to make a proportional change to offset that decrease in column length. So now we're going from 100 millimeter, 3.5 micron to a 50 millimeter, 1.8 micron. So one way to do that is by decreasing the gradient time proportionally to that decrease in column length. You can also offset the decrease in column length by a proportional decrease in the flow rate, but keep the gradient time the same. So two different options there. And as like we've talked about in with our isocratic methods, we can certainly go with a combination of length, diameter, and particle size to get the separation that works best for you. We just need to make sure we make those proportional changes needed to maintain the separation we had on our original column. This keeps our gradient steepness the same on both columns and gives us the same elution profile.
So those are great guidelines. And of course, a little experimentation is going to be required. Are there additional things we need to think about when we change column dimensions for gradient method? In addition, does it make a difference, the instrument that I'm using?
Yes, those are very good questions, and the answer to both of them is yes. Just like with isocratic separations, when we reduce column length, diameter, or both, we're reducing the column volume, and we want to reduce our injection volume proportionally so we don't overload our column. We also have to remember that the extra column volume in our system, which is everything in the sample flow path outside the column, including our injection volume, contributes to broadening our peaks. It's not such a big deal if you're using a 4.6 by 250 millimeter column because a typical peak volume might be 120 microliters. But it can be if you're using a 2.1 by 50 millimeter column where the peak volume may only be 20 or 25 microliters. You may need to look at minimizing system volume if you go to a smaller volume column.
Yeah, so help us out with that. What are some things you can do to minimize the volume?
Reducing the ID of your tubing from 0.17 to 0.12, if you have the green 0.17 tubing on your instrument, is a really good place to start. By reducing from the 0.17 to 0.12, you automatically cut the contribution from your tubing by half. Also, you're going to want to make sure you don't have excess length to your tubing. You know, if somebody just stuck in a piece of tubing and it's like 100 millimeters longer than it needs to be, you're going to want to find one that's the appropriate length with no extra. Another thing to check is the volume of your flow cell. Flow cells contribute a lot of volume to the extra column volume, and you want to make sure if you're going to a small volume column that you're not working with just a standard flow cell, but working with something that's designed to be used with smaller volume columns.
Yeah, and I know for the Agilent instruments on our website at agilent.com, we have a listing of the appropriate tubing and tubing kits as well, where it has everything you need to change out to a smaller ID stainless tubing. So are there any other things that we might want to consider when updating a gradient method?
Yes, the gradient delay time or dwell volume plays an important role. When we talk about delay time or dwell volume, this is the time or volume for the mobile phase to reach the head of your column. You want your gradient delay time or dwell volume to be the same as for the longer separation when you change to a different column. If you're moving your method to a different system, you also... Or if you've made adjustments to your current system, you need to think about that and the differences it may have made in your delay time or dwell volume, or the difference between instruments, because that can affect the time your peak spend under either isocratic or gradient conditions. We don't really have the time to talk about this now, but you can find more information in the LC Handbook, which is a publication that was put together by our applications chemist and those of us in tech support. It's a really good resource.
Yeah, we'll have that on the show notes for you so that you can click on that and get that digitally. As well as, I think we still send them out physically, but not 100% sure on that, but it's certainly up there digitally. In summary, Rita, is there anything else that we need to know today?
Yes, when we change column particle size, just like if you're doing it for an isocratic method, it may mean you need to change to a different column chemistry to take advantage of the new column technology and find the best column for updating your method. If you're using one of our traditional Jarbax chemistries, perhaps in a 5-micron particle size, we have the smaller options within the same totally porous family. But we also have options in the Infinity Lab Pore Shell superficially porous column line. We have worked to align the Infinity Lab Pore Shell columns with our traditional Jarbax chemistries to help simplify method transfer from a fully porous particle to a superficially porous particle. And we have a technical overview that looks at that. That can be a really helpful thing if you're looking to do that. As John mentioned, we'll include the LC handbook link in the show notes, and we can also include a link to this technical overview in the show notes as well. Basically, there are a lot of things to think about when you're considering updating a method. We can certainly give you guidance on how to do it, but you're the one who needs to decide if it's worth the time and cost to do it. If you only run a method once or twice a year, it's not going to be worth it. But if you're having trouble keeping up with your samples or you're not happy with your current separation, it may be worth it. Thank you.
Thank you, Rita. And I just want our listeners to know that they can reach out to Agilent, to technical specialists just like you, Rita. In fact, they may even get an opportunity to talk directly to you. If they have more questions or want some additional guidance, I think it's important, as you summarized, you know, first decide if this is really worth the time and effort and energy to update the method. Many times it is, right?
Yes.
Technologies have changed. Column chemistries have changed. Instruments and their capabilities have changed. And certainly you want to take advantage of all of those things. So take a look at the show notes today. A lot of useful information. In addition, you do have access to Rita and a team of people like Rita that can help you. Certainly reach out and let us know how we can help you. Thank you for joining us today, Rita. Once again, appreciate you wrapping up the second part in a two-part series on updating our HPLC methods. Bye for now.
Okay, thank you for listening to this episode. I promised I'd be back with a special promotion code for loyal listeners. I have that to you in just 1 minute. But I did want to mention, as we have launched into season 3, we do need your feedback. So send an email to peaktales, all one word, peaktales, at agilent.com with suggestions for episodes. And we'd be more than happy to look them over and get your question on the show. Okay, so here's the promo code that I promised. It is 1599 is the promo code, and that is available in North America only, and that will give you a discount on some chemistries and supplies, and there are limitations and instructions that apply. You can check with your sales rep or online. Okay, that's all we have for now. And please make sure that you subscribe to the Peak Tales podcast so you never miss an episode. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Peak Tales. For more information on what was discussed today, contact your local Agilent representative or go online to agilent.com.